Hello and welcome to ngbuild-pod, where we share with you our knowledge of Angular, all the mistakes we've made and some of the things we've gotten right. I'm Chris Kamak, and with me as always is John Graham, just two full-stack Angular devs that love to share and be part of the Angular community. We both work here at Miles on the Engine team in Lumberton, New Jersey, and we have spent the last several years building out our Angular template for the Miles software division and learning all things Angular along the way. John, what have you been up to in the past couple weeks?
Well, recently I've been working out again.
Well, that's good.
Very early in the morning. So I get very tired at night.
How early?
Like 5. So I got the TRX straps, you know, those strap things. I hung them up in my gym, or my garage. I call it my gym. And been doing some of those. So I'm trying to get back in shape. I was sick for a while, just kind of sedentary. So kick off the year on the right foot.
Hey, so. sounds real good. I wish you the best of luck with that.
Thanks. I'm creaking and cracking right now. How about you? Anything interesting going on in your life?
Outside of coding, my passion project has been playing the bass guitar. I've been doing that for several months now, and I just feel like I've actually hit that point where I've crested beyond novice. Mm. I don't think I'd say intermediate. That feels too good for me. Yeah. But I've gotten to a point where I can actually start to make my own rhythms and sort of piece together my own stuff, which feels like a milestone.
What's your latest jam?
Oh, actually, I've been playing a lot of Alice in Chains lately.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I really enjoy their stuff from like Jar of Flies, Dirt, that sort of thing.
Okay.
It's been cool. Great.
Nice. So what are we talking about today?
Well, the thing that we wanted to talk about today is Angular change detection. And you know, this is something that is, you know, kind of really well known out there as to it exists in Angular, but I don't think a lot of people out there that are using Angular really fully understand how it works or why they run into some of the things that they do. And so just to give a quick overview, obviously, you know, it's basically going to handle the view updates on the components whenever the template bindings change. But before we get too far into that, I do want to have a little moment to talk about our quick tips of the day. John, what do you have for us?
I have something that blew my mind the other day.
Oh, that's great.
It's just Windows, so maybe there's an equivalent for Mac and Linux, but I haven't looked into it, which is the Windows V command. And what the Windows V command does is it actually pulls up a nice little UI of your clipboard history, and you can filter through it, and you can hit Enter.
Wow.
And it will actually paste it in wherever your cursor is.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so like I've been working on updating our templates, like our template generators, our Yeoman stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I find is I end up flipping between like three different variables that we use frequently, you know, throughout the template, right? We'll use like the name of whatever it is, you know, the service name, like a bunch of things like that. So rather than having to go and copy and paste, and you know, I'm sure if I was better at regex, I could just do like a really cool find replace, but I'm not, so I just, you know, go through manually.
You can always find a way that you're not as good as you'd like to be yet.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's fine.
So it's been really great for me because I can just, I don't have to like go find the last place I did it. It's just the top three things. I just go to the section, highlight it, Windows V, bam, hit two clipboards ago or three clipboards ago, stuff like that.
That sounds really good.
It's been like a pretty nice optimization to like my dev workflow.
I like it.
Because
like
how many times like you copy something, then you go to paste it and you accidentally hit copy again. Mm-hmm. So you lose it. So then you got to go back. Like with this, you just Windows V and it's the next thing down. So it's super convenient.
I like that. That's a good tip.
Checked it out. Yeah.
It's a good one.
I just like read about it the other day and I was like, oh, that seems useful. But yeah, how about you? What knowledge bombs are you dropping today?
Well, I think a big tip I think a lot of people could use out there is what is object assign and how can you use it? So object.assign is something that's really just part of JavaScript. It's not specific to Angular or TypeScript for that matter. But it's extremely helpful because it allows you a way to take properties from one object and put them over top of another one. Instead of doing a property by property assignment of an object, you can really just say, take everything this one has and paste it on top of the other one. And it actually allows you to do that with multiple objects. Like you can comma separate them and put tons of them in. So the one furthest to the right is going to have the most priority. And it will try to place its properties over top of the thing on the left and so on and so forth all the way down until it gets to the leftmost object. And there's a lot on how this works, but I can tell you it saved us a ton of time when we're talking about configuration objects inside of an Angular library, where we have like this module level config, which is kind of like this overall way we want something to work. And then we have a component override for that configuration. So if a component override comes in, whatever it said should be pasted on top of the module one. And this gives us a way to nicely, you know, distill them down to something. So if you want to learn more about object design, I recommend just throw that into Google real quick as a search and you'll come up with the Mozilla docs on it. It's very easy to follow.
Yeah, and it's so like from right to left, it's like last in wins on the properties. So, you know, if you start defining an object with properties on the right, whatever you define that property to be last on the left is what actually gets assigned to the
right.
object.
And the one furthest to the left actually gets changed as an object, mm-hmm. and everything prior to that point was not modified during the operation.
Okay.
That's so it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it's just like you can add properties, modify them,
yeah.
do whatever. Oh, cool.
Yeah, and you can do as many of them as you want.
Yeah, I know I've seen it used a lot. It's hard for me to like think about the use cases, but I know like with our configurations, it's been very helpful and I've used it. So that's a pretty cool one.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah. All right, so change detection, right? We're gonna demystify change detection.
Well,
for the listeners out there, right? It's going to be simple and easy to understand.
I'll say we'll lift some of the fog.
Okay.
How about that? I mean, demystifying.
Pull back the veil.
Well, if we say demystify without fully demystifying, sure. Because, I mean, there's a lot there. We can't cover all of it today.
Sure.
But what we can do is we can talk about some of the most common misconceptions and sort of, you know, hit on those objects.
Yeah. So, you know, let's start by, you know, just giving people a base understanding of, you know, what causes change detection. So you said in the preamble that change detection is, you know, when you modify a value, the template binding gets updated, so you see it in real time. So the classic example on all the Angular Hello Worlds is you type in a text box and you have a label tied to that model, and then the label is, displaying your text as you're typing, right? So that's
yeah.
the classic, like, blow people's minds with Angular.
Yeah.
At least it blew my mind, like, 7 years ago when I first saw it.
Exactly. I mean, I would say it's the thing you show older .NET developers
ooh.
That don't understand how that would possibly work. And then they're like, wow, we have to use this thing. And that was, like, the magic.
Yeah.
But technically, it's just this function, right? This function that is saying, has something changed? If it has, I need to do something with that. And that's really at the heart of it all it is. It's a function that's recursively checking all your views.
Yeah, and just to clarify, we're not targeting .NET developers. We were the older .NET developers that
oh,
minds
yes.
were exploded when,
yes.
they, when
yes.
we first saw it.
And so. We still are .NET developers.
Yeah.
So.
Cool, so maybe you can explain a little bit about you know, what's going on. Why does this just happen? You know what I mean? Like, how does
sure.
Angular know to just do this for us? Like,
sure.
I'm not telling it that I want that.
Right. So, I mean, out of the box, the Angular framework has this concept built into it. And what it's really doing under the hood is it's saying, I want to be aware of every component in existence in your application right now. So think of what you're looking at on the screen of an Angular application as being a component tree. So every tree, every component has a branch on that tree. And what it wants to do is it wants to recognize anytime something changes that would touch that, any of those views, it now wants to run a full change cycle to see what's changed and what needs to change in all of those components. And just think about how many you might have on the screen at one time, especially with some sort of NG4 involved or something like that. You know, this can get really big. Especially because it's called recursively. So, I mean, this is going to hit over and over and over again. It's amazing how fast Angular is considering this is going on under the hood.
Yeah, and so Angular does have this concept of, like, tracking what could actually be impacted by change detection, right? So it's not, you know, going to fire off change detection on, like, an H1 that's just got static text in it. You know what I mean? It's just looking for things where you've defined an NG model, you're doing some, like, some interpolation of like some syntax that Angular
sure,
knows.
Sure, sure.
So that's like one of the great things about, you know, why it so works so well, right? Is because it's actually using some intelligence to figure out, you know, well, what do I really actually want to change? I don't want to refresh the whole screen. You know, I don't want to refresh this whole everything that's going on there. I want to pick and choose what I'm refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, just to go a little deeper, slightly more advanced concept here, but certainly approachable. What it's really doing is it's storing a view for each component. But when I say a view, you might think I mean all of the HTML. I do not mean all the HTML. Instead, what I'm talking about is the bindings. All the points where your code in the TS file is touching that HTML. That's what it's really monitoring, is the ins and outs between your view. So if your H1 doesn't have any bindings to it, yeah, it's not even part of this concept.
Right.
But if it did, let's say its inner text was bound to some property, now you're talking about the binding that's being watched. So really, it's all these bindings. So take the number of components that are on the screen right now, and then for each of them, add up all their bindings, and this is how many times it's running, in a sense.
Yeah,
this is the performance hit right now.
And these are those like weird, are these those like weird NG tags I see when I look at like the render DOM? It's got like those little markers.
That's how it knows exactly where to put the thing if it changes. Now, the other thing that change detection stores, again, it's a little bit further concept in, but I think it's a good one. The other thing that it stores is what is its current values now? Because when it runs that change detection cycle, it's going to say, what are my values now? And I look at my old values the last time I ran this. If those aren't different, then it doesn't do anything with that binding. So it's very smart about how it actually takes action. But in order to do that, it does have to evaluate everything that's a binding at least once.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a great optimization right there, you know, to just only actually take action when something has changed and not just, you know, flush changes to the screen and, you know, whatever, we'll see what happens.
So, absolutely.
So I think that, you know, so with Angular, they have something called change detection strategies.
Yeah.
Right, so that's what they call these. There's really only two.
There is only two.
So,
and one of them's named default. Just to jump ahead. I mean, I love that one's called default.
Yeah.
Which everything we've discussed so far, that's default.
Default. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's good to discuss that we're going to talk about some of the other options, but certainly default works for almost everything.
Yeah.
I mean, there's very few scenarios where default doesn't accomplish the goal. Now, there are some things where maybe you want to, you know, optimize a little bit more. You know, maybe the fact that it evaluates every single thing, but maybe doesn't change, but still evaluates it, isn't good enough. You use the example of like an NG4.
Yeah.
You know, so you have NG4, you have 1,000 elements in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that the change detection gets triggered is it's triggered when values change, it's triggered on events, and it's hooking into all these lower-level JavaScript APIs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever go look at the Angular GitHub, you can see how it's kind of saying, oh, you wanted to do an event listener, I'm going to add some change detection logic around when you do an event listener for JavaScript. So, you know, maybe you don't want it to evaluate this 1,000, you know, object list every single time something happens that is completely unrelated to what could possibly impact changes in that list, right?
Yeah.
But only you're going to know that, right? Angular can't figure that out. It's got to just try to guess. It does its best job guessing.
Yeah.
So,
and like most performance situations, if you're working in the kind of development environment we are, which is business to business, most of the time is where we sit, usually that performance comes into question when things are slow enough that someone says something about it. They're like, hey, I went to work with this thing and it kind of had a delay. And that's the moment where you're like, ugh, better start looking at that. And if there's a lot of components on the screen, maybe you're dealing with a change detection issue. Maybe it's taking so long to run that change digest cycle, which that's old terminology. That's AngularJS stuff.
AngularJS terminology.
But it really, that's what it is. It's digesting an Angular change detection cycle.
Right. Yeah. So when this occurs, right, and like you said, I think a lot of times, you know, we all like to think we can pre-optimize or plan for this stuff, but usually you're stumbling into a performance issue. You may want to look into the other strategy for Angular, and that's the on-push change detection strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very easy to turn on or off, depending on what you want to do. It's just right at the component declaration level where you define your selector and your template. You have a option to define the change detection strategy.
Yeah.
So you just set it right there. You set it to on push. So what's What's the difference here? I mean, I can kind of guess by the name that it has something to do with sending information to the component by push, but you know, break it down for me. Like, what does it actually change from the default behavior?
Yeah, so I mean, let's start with what does on push really mean? It means that I'm not going to run change detection anytime something else happens unless it's one of these scenarios. And these scenarios are that an input of me as a component, an input has changed.
You're talking about the at input, like an actual, you know,
exactly.
input binding.
Yeah, if one of my at inputs has changed, then I will fire change detection when I'm on push. But that's the only time. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about what does that actually mean, though, in real terms. Let's say that the thing I'm putting into an at input component is an object. Let's say that it's a customer object. Mm-hmm. And that customer object, I'll say, has tons of properties on it. Now, if I were to take that customer object, which was passed in by ref, of course, from some parent object, if I were to take that thing and change the name property on it, and then let's say the component that received this as an at input is using the customer.name property to display it on some H1, as you said before. Mm-hmm. If that's happening, when I'm on default, the change detection will look at not just the object of customer, but all of its properties as well. It'll reiterate all the way down through that structure of an object. When I'm on push, the only thing it's checking for has the reference changed, yes or no. And since all I did was change a property value in customer, the answer is no. The reference has not changed. It's still the same customer. It's just that one of its child properties has changed. Well, in that case, push would not actually fire. You wouldn't see that name change.
Right. So this is, it can get a little tricky, right? Because, you know, the key difference here is like the actual object itself needs to be modified in some way, like the top level interface of it. Mm-hmm. You can't just go and change a property or something like that inside, because change detection is going to be like, nope, don't care about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It doesn't have the, you're telling it not to take the bandwidth to check that kind of thing.
Right. So, and in this case, I think I've even seen in some cases where you use object assign from your quick tip earlier to go ahead and help with the mutation of that object. And just for the people out there, I know I don't have any experience with it. Probably you don't as well. But I've seen a lot of things where people say if you're getting into on push a lot, you may want to look into adding in some immutability libraries to your application. So the immutable JS is the one that I see a lot.
Correct.
We don't use onPush a lot because we fall into the 90% category, where default is normally fine. So we haven't really introduced those, so I don't want to speak on their validity of whether or not they're great. But it seems like, you know, I have run into the scenario you described, which is I change a property. Hey, what the heck's going on here? It's not doing what I think it should be doing. You know, and I just don't think in that immutable context all the time.
Sure.
So that's just a little thing to think about. There's some other ways to do it with object assign, stuff like that, to get the reference to change. Because it can be a little confusing about, like, when you say the reference of the object. You know, what does that mean? Like, a property to me could be part of the reference, but...
Yeah, it means that you have to actually assign a new customer object. You can't just modify some property within that customer object. But I agree with you. It is confusing, and I think a lot of people have trouble, especially early on working with Angular, and if they're new to TypeScript, you know, concept of mutating an object versus not mutating it and instead reassigning it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was definitely tough, I think, for me to pick up. Sure. But a good thing to learn about, because obviously mutation and immutable objects is considered by many a much safer way to write programs. So definitely something to check in. So that's kind of what onPush is. And we talked about 90%. We talked about NG4, stuff like that. You know, can you give us an example, like talk to about an example of where we've actually used it, like a real world scenario where we need it on push here?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the one that comes to mind right away is we created an object for standard lists.
A component.
You're right, a component. We made a component for standard lists. We call it the entity list. Mm-hmm. And the idea is it should be able to display basically a responsive table for, you know, any objects that we wanted it to. And it does a really good job at that. But the problem that we had with it is anytime I clicked anywhere on this list, it fired off the change detection and it tried to redraw everything. Now that's not a problem if you've got five lines.
And because with default, you're talking about when you have the yeah. default strategy, you know, a click is an event listener on yep. JavaScript. So that's something that Angular's hooked into and it's going to fire off change yep. detection. You have all these bindings in this list, so it's refreshing this stuff. And I really like, I don't know if you were going to get to this, but I really like how you discovered this. Can you just tell people how you actually like discovered it happening? Do you remember how you
did actually, that? I don't remember.
I remember because you called me over and you showed me.
Oh, well, then really, it'll be news to me again, too.
So what I like most about it is it was the most non-technical way to discover a technical problem in the world, which is you were looking at something completely different. I think you were building some feature that I don't remember. And you had your developer tools open and you had it on the elements. And you're just doing whatever feature you're working on, and you're clicking, and you're noticing all of this flashing happening on the screen.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, right? a ton of different TDs coming in and out of existence
right.
on my editor, and I'm or not my editor, but my Chrome DevTools. Inspection yeah. tools, exactly.
Yeah.
And I said, "Ooh, that's not good."
Yeah, and you were just like, "Wow, that seems weird to me. Why would that be doing all that stuff?" And that was, you know, again. We talk at the beginning of this podcast, the things we learned, you know, when we set out on the Angular front. I mean, we did it 3 years ago when Angular 2 came out. So mm-hmm. we started pretty early on, you know, unless you were, you know, really into like the betas and stuff. A lot of this information wasn't known. Like, I didn't know about onPush and these change detection strategies. So I just thought it was a really funny way that we kind of stumbled upon a very complicated and interesting topic that
right.
we're now trying to help some other people understand. But yeah. so, you know, just to demystify, as you said before, the way that you figure these things out is it's not always like, you know, I was reading this article and it led me to this other thing and now I've read about change detection and I realized we're doing everything wrong. And with our case,
that came
it was,
after.
that did come after. But in our case, it was like, hey, this looks weird.
Yeah.
And that's not something I'm expecting. So I think it's a good tip out there to, you know, just because when something looks weird, don't take it at face value. You know, try to understand, well, what the heck happened there?
Yeah.
Why did it look weird? So anyway, that was my little diversion. I just thought that was an interesting way that you brought the
I agree. I think it is an interesting thing about it. Now, the thing about our entity list is, though, if you've got 10 or 15 of them, I noticed it in these inspection tools, but I didn't really like see a blink on the screen or anything. It didn't
right.
visually bother me. I didn't notice it. But then in order to test that theory, I said, well, let's put 500 lines into this thing. And then once I did that, oh yeah, I could notice visually the refresh that was going on. So what we ended up doing is saying our entity list is on push, which had a nice little gotcha in there. Do you remember that one?
Well, I mean, I remember some times where it got me, but I don't know. I think you're maybe alluding to the fact that we had some other components that were pieces of the entity list, like child components of it.
Yeah, and the thing that I didn't know originally, but certainly found out within the few months after, is that on push doesn't just affect the component that you're touching. It doesn't mean on push just for this component. It means for anything that's a child of it in its view also. So if that entity list is ng4ing over top of something else that's a component, well, now that component's on push too, whether you said it was or not. So understanding that it really is like a parent to child relationship, that on push is now inherited all the way down. You know, that's something that I don't think is obvious and I don't think is explained very well and certainly can be a gotcha that hits you later on.
Right. So we may have a component, you know, and this is a big gotcha because, you know, components are shareable, right? So you create a component, you don't set the on push change detection because you don't want on push. It doesn't make sense for the component. And then you're implementing it, right? So you implement it here, you implement it there, you implement it there. When your third implementation becomes a child component of, in our case, the entity list, these two implementations over here, it doesn't do on push. It's totally fine, does default. This implementation over here, because it's underneath of entity list,
yep.
it's now going to have this on push strategy. And that was not something we expected, like
yeah.
you were saying. Yeah.
Not only that, but I mean, think about it from this standpoint. I mean, we're in a situation where we're working on project teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I create a component and I implement it and everything works great, good for me.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're working on the container of that section and you decide that for your purposes on push is going to work for you, those are things that could collide even in a merge request,
yeah.
that it wouldn't be obvious that I'm changing the behavior of someone else's work.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it can be a problem.
And I think this is why it's important to realize that, like, you should be selective with on push.
Well,
you know, you because it adds complexity.
Okay, sure. And for us,
you know,
us,
it, complexity is my enemy.
I understand. For us, I agree with you. And for our situation, I think it's a choice you should make. And I'll tell you, for devil's advocate purposes, there are people out there that have created node modules and packages, and they've created linters that check your code to ensure that every component is on push.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's another side to that, you know?
Different tools to accomplish the same goal. Yeah, for sure. I'm not saying blanketly on push is a bad call. I just think you need to realize the complexity you're adding, you know, by doing that. So.
Yeah, just know what you're getting into, but realize that, you know, our scenario is not everybody's. So, I mean, certainly both could be valid. Depends on where we're at.
Yeah, and I think, like, you brought up a gotcha, right, where, you know, we weren't expecting this child thing to have on push, and the reason that, you know, that we figured that gotcha out is we changed something and expected change detection to happen like it normally would.
Yep.
You know, so in this case, I don't think the answer is to, you know, always, you know, make that component now, you know, use on push correctly, things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not always a good option, you know, because sometimes the component's very simple or it's doing something that you just don't want to have any outside interaction with it, something like that. So I know they have this service, I think it's called a service, right, that Angular provides called the Change Detector Ref.
Yes, correct. Well, I mean, it is a service.
I call them services.
It's totally a service. It's an injectable, I guess we'll call it.
Yeah.
But technically, that Change Detector Ref is specific to the view of that component that you're getting it in.
Right.
So when you pull in, I generally shorten it to the CDR.
CDR, yeah.
When you pull in the CDR to a component, it's really got a reference to that view. Not all views, just that.
Because you're
one.
Bringing it in the constructor of the component like you would do a normal service.
Correct, so. Correct. So. But this is a good time to talk about that. I mean, how would you use the change detector ref? Why would you need it?
Yeah, you know, so, you know, in these scenarios where we ran into these child components that we're doing things unexpectedly, you know, we're changing values, you know, or we're mutating, you know, properties and things, and we expect something to happen on the screen, and it doesn't. Mm-hmm. So luckily, Angular is like, okay, you know, this is a problem that people are going to run into, mm-hmm. where they're going to want to take control over when change detection happens.
Yeah.
They're going to want to know.
Be more surgical about it.
Yeah, they're going to want to have weird scenarios that we can't think about. You know, you and I have run into those a few times. Building tools that other developers use. Mm-hmm. People do weird things, and you can't anticipate everything. So the best thing to do is give people control. And that's what the change detector ref is. It's control over the change detection. So when you're modifying some object that's nested inside and change detection isn't doing what you want, you can really easily just say, hey, I know you have this plan of what change detection is, this on-push plan that I told you to do.
Yep, my choice.
Yep, my choice. but we are humans, and we change our minds.
Yep.
So now I don't want you to follow that strategy.
Yeah.
And so you just do the CDR like you did, and that's just your local variable, mm-hmm. and then you just fire off detect changes.
Yeah, right? So the CDR has a method called detect changes. And essentially what that says is run detection right now. It doesn't mean that we're going to change the on push to default or anything like that, but it does mean I know there's a change that I want to digest here. I know it happened. Maybe it's because you're listening to some variable in maybe a behavior subject or some other observable. You're listening to this thing and you know it just changed, but you know, since I haven't actually gotten a new input, that this on push component's not going to recognize that change. It's not going to do anything with it.
Yeah.
So here's where you can say, hey, Angular change detection, run now, right now, for this particular view. And that's a really powerful thing if you think about it, because now we can say, I know when it should be run. I'll tell you when it needs to happen.
Yeah.
So that's pretty nice. You know, it also has another way of going where you can say, instead of detect changes, you can say mark for check, which is interesting because mark for check is it's accomplishing something similar, but it does it a little bit differently. So mark for check, what it does is it says, when you run your next change detection, I want you to be checking this thing. Oh, and by the way, you should fire a change detection, and all of my parents should also look in for another check. So detect changes is more local. Mm-hmm. Mark for check is actually changing a digest cycle above itself. So it's going out to more things above it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it's an interesting difference, but most of the time I think detect changes is kind of where we're at.
Yeah, so the change detector ref has a lot of like weird, nice convenience things.
Yep.
So the key thing for me to that I always try to remember is whenever I want to do something weird, get in there, look at the interfaces, kind of explore what options it has. And they got great docs for Angular, so usually you can...
Yeah, they do now. Yeah. Not back in 2.
Yeah.
But now they're pretty good. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So I do want to talk about maybe another gotcha real quick, because I think this is like one of the most Googled gotchas that I run into that I just am never sure how to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know how I get into it in the first place. And that's the infamous expression changed after its value was set. And I'm doing air quotes because there's some things in between that I'm paraphrasing. But I think most Angular developers have run into this problem. And maybe they Googled and somebody had a Stack Overflow post and they did it and it worked. But again, like I don't even know how I get into these problems.
Sure.
So can you, I know you're the master of expression changed after the fact.
I've dealt with it more than once.
I come to you whenever I hit this problem. I don't even try to figure it out. I just go, Chris, this happened again.
Help me. Sure.
No. So tell me about it. Like, what's going on there?
All right. So really, here's what's happening. It's running a change digest cycle, and it's storing the values that it got during that first run. Now, Angular does something interesting, I'm going to tell you this, and just follow me. It only does it in development mode. Yeah. Doesn't do it in production mode. Doesn't do it in AOT. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it runs a second pass on change detection. And it's doing this for a very good reason. It's basically trying to ensure that the state of your model that it's using for all these bindings is not going to be mutating. Like, it wants to ensure that you have a stable model, which is nice. Nice of it to do that, right?
Yeah.
So this second firing is basically looking at all of the values that are being bound and saying, have any of these changed from the old value? And if it did, it fires off this red error message that says expression changed after its value was set. Used to be this, and now it's that. And that's just a warning to you. It doesn't come across as a warning in the console, but that's really what it is. It's trying to warn you that you may have an unstable model. You might want to check out what this is. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times it comes up and you kind of knew that it was going to come up, so it's just annoying.
Yeah, I think like the scenario where I do it is I am working usually with reactive forms.
Sure.
And we pass in the initial object that we want to be bound to the reactive form. So mm-hmm. we're doing like an info page. I pull the data from API, I load it up. And then I try to get real cheeky and I'm like, oh, but I want to, add one day to the date, because that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
But I don't do it the way of like getting the form control after the form has been initiated. I just try to change it real quick in like the ng-on init or something like that.
Or after viewing it. Or after wherever.
Viewing it. Sure. Yeah. Wherever I'm trying to be real, real fancy. And that's when it's like anger is like, whoa, you gave me this model. I built this form for you. Now you're trying to tell me that this isn't the form you want.
Right.
And you're not doing it the way you're supposed to do it, which is like getting the control and accessing its value and changing it that way.
Yeah.
So that I know how to deal with all of the other things that go with that, like maybe it makes it invalid, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the scenario that I run into a lot. And really the answer is like you're saying, it's just usually you're just doing something weird that Angular is trying to figure out to be helpful. Now if I push that code live, it's not going to error out. It's also not going to do what I want it to do either. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
it's a good kind of like stopgap there.
Well, it's not just that. It's also, it's trying to digest this thing, and if it says something's wrong or notices something's wrong, it's just trying to be helpful. And if you don't take care of that error, yeah, right. If you push to prod, you're fine. It's not going to rear its ugly head over there. But if someone else pulls down your code and goes to work on the same area, they're going to see this error. So now you're really just passing the buck to some other developer problem.
Yeah.
So, it's better to take care of it. Let's talk about some of the ways that you could take care of it. Do you want to take the first one?
Where
we were talking about using detect changes in a set timeout?
No, you can explain that.
No problem. I'll go into it. So you really have two major options when it comes to dealing with an expression changed after its value is set. You can either tell it to be something that's going to check detect changes right after it got done all the other things it did. Mm-hmm. And this is usually done by a set timeout, where basically you're using a set timeout to say when every other piece of code has done, run change detection again.
Yeah.
And then that kind of says, I know you ran once. I know you ran a second time and came across an expression changed after value. I want you to run a third time and then ignore the thing you just said.
Right.
Okay. And that does work most of the time.
Yeah. Not ideal.
Not ideal.
Yeah. So the set timeout just drops it to the bottom of the stack. So
that's all you're doing. You're basically delaying action of another detect change cycle until after everything else has been evaluated.
Gotcha.
So that's one way to go. A second way to go, a way that I am now dubbing the nuclear option, is you can actually use another thing that the CDR presents us, which is called detach. So when you detach your change detector ref, you're basically saying, I don't want you to have change detection right now. So think about what that would mean. It means I'm not going to run the first time or the second time. So there will be no expression changed after value is set.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, you got to turn it back on. Otherwise, you don't have an Angular component anymore, do you?
Right.
So you can detach, but you have to some point decide to reattach. So this is the same concept, but done slightly differently. Right in the init, you would use your CDR to detach, and then you would have a set timeout right after that, where you just grab the same CDR and say, reattach.
Yeah.
And then that's pretty much it.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, that's a great way to get around some really edge case, I think, some change detection things that are just really tough to manage the life cycles of what's going on.
Yeah, and the other thing is, of course, in that second version, you don't end up with something running change detection three times just because you're trying to get around something. Yeah,
it's kind of the throw the whole kitchen sink at it kind of method, you know what I mean?
That one.
So cool. So we are running a little short on time. We're going to wrap up here in a minute, but I do want to just quickly touch on one other optimization that I found that's really nice, which is, pipes versus functions in your template.
Yeah.
And, a real quick explanation of that. When you run functions, every time the change detection occurs, like with everything else that's bound in the template, it's going to reevaluate that function.
And when you say functions, I think you mean like in the HTML, if you're using a function to drop a value in somewhere.
Yeah. So like a good example is like calculate tax.
Okay.
Right. So I do, whenever this changes, I want to run a calculate tax. So I go pull the values in the TypeScript and I, do some calculations and I get a tax value.
Sure.
But the key thing to remember is every time change detection happens, it's going to rerun that function.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So one of the things that I learned that was really helpful is that's where pipes come in, and pipes are really useful. And I'm talking about Angular pipes here, because you can write that same logic, the same exact logic. You put it in a pipe. And the great thing about the pipes are, is that Angular does that comparison a little bit more intelligently inside the pipe, and it says, hey, is my value actually changed from its previous value? If the answer is no, then I skip change detection on this. I don't even try to evaluate it.
Oh, so the pipe doesn't run in that case.
It doesn't run at all.
But the function would.
Yes.
Function runs every time, regardless of the value changed, because it's got to know if the value changed by running the function.
Exactly.
In your case, you're saying, if the value hasn't changed, I don't run this pipe.
Yeah, I don't even want to evaluate the value, just keep it there.
That's awesome.
So that's a really nice little optimization, too, to keep in mind. If you see a lot of functions and you have a slow component, that could be something to do. Cool. All right. So I think we're kind of wrapping up here. And any final thoughts before we...
The only final thought I have on this one is change detection can be rough. You know, there's a lot of good guides out there, but there's also like a ton of different information between Angular 2 all the way up through Angular 9 now. So it's hard, and there's a lot to digest out there. But if you take the time to invest in it, I think it's going to pay back big dividends.
For sure. Yeah. And I think that, it's not something you need to get into right away.
Yeah.
Because the default works so well. So, get your feet comfortable and on solid ground, and then dive into change detection, save yourself some time.
Cool. All right. Well, I guess that's going to wrap things up for us. Thanks for listening. Of course, we'd like you to follow us. I'm at Pilgrim Secret on Twitter.
Yep.
John?
At John Graham Dev on Twitter. And I'll just plug, I just did start a blog recently. I'm trying to do one a week. So you can get me at johngraham.dev. John Graham, G-R-A-H-A-M, dot dev.
Nice. Oh, and also our podcast now has a Twitter account, at ngbuildpod.
Awesome.
So that's very good. Where are we going to be heading out here soon? Like, we're going to Code Camp. We're going to do a talk there.
Yep. Planning on hitting up the Philly.net Code Camp, which is in Pennsylvania,
right.
In Malvern, right near the Microsoft office there. So certainly check that out, and if you're interested. And we're also going to be at Dev Intersection, which is in Orlando, on April 6th through the 9th. So come check us out. Let us know what you think about the podcast. We'd love to sit down and chat with you. And as always, you know, we work for Miles Technologies. That's the company where we do all this great and awesome Angular stuff. And we're always looking for great developers. So if you're
just brought in a couple of new ones.
Just brought in a few.
Need to train them up.
Definitely. And so you can visit our website, milestechnologies.com, and you can check out the careers page if you're interested in joining in on what you hear about on this podcast, you know, all things Angular and great things like that.
Wonderful. So. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us. Thank you very much for listening. If you have any questions, comments, and especially if you have any feedback, just reach out to us on Twitter. We'll look forward to hearing from you.
Yep. Great. Thanks, everybody.
See ya.
See ya.